this one of the survivors, I forget his name for the moment, Tom...
Biederman.
Did he come and talk to you? Did he tell you anything about what happened?
I talked with some of them, and he said that whoever I talked with, and I don't remember whether it was Tom or maybe there's two or three of them. There's
two survivors.
Two survivors on there, and I think that there were two waves of planes that came in there and bombed them. They made a couple, either one wave made a run and went out, and I remember them saying they went out, turned around the west, and came back and made another run. Because I know that I recall distinctly saying that there was two runs made, and I don't know, remember which, on which run, whether it was the first or second run, that these two boys got killed. Might have been one the first, but it was, seemed to me like it was on the second or first run that they got killed. I don't know which run they, but it was on Monday morning of 8th of December, the next morning after the Japs had hit Pearl Harbor on Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, the next morning. And as I remember it, I think it was sometime around during the day. It wasn't early in the morning. It was, might have been, say, 10 o'clock, or it could have been later. I don't know. I don't remember. But there were two waves, and they were heavy caliber bombs. They said there were quite large craters out there, and some of the buildings just... you see, the Japs wouldn't go around there much. Submarines didn't go around there much. We were suspicious that the Japanese, have you got that tape going? Mm-hmm. We had reason to believe, this is no state secrets or secrets.
There are no secrets in World War II anymore, they're all declassified.
But the general idea was in some circles, some of the grapevine had it, that we were thought and were suspicious of what the Japanese were doing on the Gilbert Islands to the west. And I think that it might have been that the Japanese were suspicious of what we were doing on Howland Island. And about the only conclusion that we could infer from their attack on the island was that, Howland Island, was that they had imagined that we would put in airfields there, extensive airfields and underground installations for aircraft, combat or otherwise, which was, of course, was a lot of nonsense. When they were anticipating Amelia Earhart landing on that island, I think they got out there and cleared away some stones, and there might have been some people sent down there to clear away a landing strip, sort of level it up. But there never was any paving for emergency landing that I knew of, or anything of that nature.
You didn't go down in 1942 when they built the airfield on Baker. They didn't tap you to go down there.
That was after, because I never went down there after 1941.
That last cruise that you went down the Pango Pango.
Went on any cruise down there after we got back on our last cruise, which...
December 5th.
December the 6th. Or 5th.
Yeah.
And then that was my last trip.
Do you remember Robert Campbell of the FAA?
Now, Robert Campbell, it seems to me that he was with the Federal CAB, wasn't it?
Yeah, FAA, Federal Aviation Agency, yeah.
He was with the Federal Aviation
Department
Agency.
Department of Commerce.
Department of Commerce. I remember him, I met him, he was kind of a stout, heavily yeah. built fella. I remember he was kind of brown and husky, a rather large fella.
You like him, nice fella?
Yeah, he seemed to be a very a nice, agreeable, pleasant sort of fellow to get along with. Campbell.
Yeah, Bob Campbell.
Bob Campbell. I remember him. I met him and talked with him several times there. I don't remember, but it was always incident to what was going on the islands in the way of equipment, supplies, and aviation business that they might. I think he was concerned maybe about, I think it was the Federal Aviation Authority that let us have a lot of our radio equipment down there to make our weather reports on. I think that was the angle, although I'm not sure. But I know that we got some transmitters down there, things that had been surveyed from the Federal Aviation Authority or wherever they had these installations back in the United States. They were still could operate, but they had voice communication. And I remember one of the things was we, to carry voice back, voice communication back from down there to come in reasonably reliable and regular in Honolulu, we took 200 watts of power. Or however, our counterpart over there, the Englishman, he was using Morse code in a key and getting reports back to Australia and back to London were 5 watts. And 5 watts on his communication, but he was sitting there with a key tapping it out. Of course, it takes a lot more power for a voice than it does.
Do you remember Black?
Oh yes, I remember Black. He was out there when I got there.
What kind of fellow was he?
He was, I think Black was pretty much of a loner in a way. He was not married. And I remember that there was, the dope was that there was quite a few of the ladies, eligible ladies, because he was quite an eligible bachelor out there. They were all not making a play for him, but they were being pleasant with him and they were having a good time. They'd go out for dinner and dances to Ghost Guard affairs or the affairs there at the governor's palace and civil affairs. He was there. He met and mixed very well with the people that was out there. And I know we Coast Guard led along with him, all right. I never heard one thing against him that was in the least controversial. He was pleasant, and still there was a certain aloofness. There's certain groups that maybe were inclined to be a bit on the swinging side that he never took part in that I knew anything about.
He's not what you call gregarious. He didn't just...
Well, I think he was quite interested in his work, and he stayed on the job, and I think he might have been super conscientious, and he might have taken some of the work home with him. I don't know this for a fact. This is just purely speculation on my part.
What do you think of, what kind of a captain was Thompson?
Thompson was a very good commanding officer. He was, he ran a taut ship, which I admired. I liked him. And we always got along very well with him. And the general theory was prevalent, although it was not always the case. It was always good for a junior officer leaving the Coast Guard Academy to go to a taut ship for training as an officer. Discipline, and the proper way of doing things. Where, as I think, the theory was on the smaller ships, everybody crammed together in close quarters, and their ships was not quite as slack regarding uniforms and so on. But so far as reports and discipline and everything, it was just as tight on those ships as it was on the larger vessels. Same routine and same deference in addressing officers, either those above you or below you, as always the same. There was no distinction. It was just a little bit more lax on these smaller.
Well, usually, wasn't it kind of always said that as a balance on a ship, that if the captain tended to be quite stiff or tended to be quite strict, the executive officer as a counterbalance tended to be a little easier.
Well, he was kind of took up a medium course. He was in closer association with the officer aboard the ship, because the executive officer lived in the wardroom country, while the commanding officer on board the ship, he had his separate cabin aft, and he also had an emergency cabin forward, adjacent to the bridge of the ship.
See, that would be on the starboard side, just below the bridge. Or port side. Sick bay was on the...
Well, sometimes it was
on the attachment.
On the same level as the next cabin down.
Yeah. And was it the starboard side?
Starboard side.
Was the captain's...
His emergency cabin.
Did he have a desk in there at all?
Oh, yes. He had a desk in there.
He hold captain's mast? Would he hold it in his...
Well, captain's mast was always held on the quarter deck.
On the quarter deck.
Open deck.
What if it was inclement weather?
Well, they usually didn't hold it. There was a captain's mast was an irregular affair.
I see.
But they didn't let these offenses accumulate. But now sometimes there was awning stretched, and there'd be an awning there if it was.
But it was done in full view of the crew on the quarterdeck.
All full view of everybody.
Okay. The emergency, what'd you call it now?
The emergency cabin.
Emergency cabin.
Forward. That was the commanding officer's emergency cabin. As it indicated, in case of stormy weather or thick weather going into ports or at sea up there, whereby there may be some J.O., a junior officer that would have a deck, officer of the deck, conning the ship. And if he see something that he wanted to get the captain in a hurry, he could talk to him, but the captain may want to get on the bridge, and a junior officer or whatever officer called might want him there right away.
Okay, now, this was on the starboard side, immediately under the bridge on the Itasca. Was there an inside ladder to the bridge?
No. I think that he could go inside the... Now, immediately aft, part way, there was a radio shack.
Well, now that was on the boat deck, aft of the stack.
That was up on the second deck. That was on the second deck level. Same level as the level of the deck on the bridge.
Wasn't it one deck below the bridge?
No, I don't think so. You left that deck and came out of there and went down aft.